Great to be with you this morning. There's this excerpt from My Utmost for His Highest that Oswald Chambers wrote. And I just wonder if there's something in this for us today. He writes, "Suppose God tells you to go against something that is an enormous test of your common sense. In fact, totally going against it. What would you do? Would you hold back? Yet we tend to say, yes, God, maybe I'll do that, but suppose I do obey God in this matter. What about this? What about that? Or we say, yes, I will obey God if what he asks me doesn't go against my common sense. But don't ask me to take a step totally in the dark. Jesus Christ demands the same unrestrained, adventurous spirit in those who have placed their trust in him that the natural man exhibits. If a person is ever going to do anything worthwhile in this world, there'll be times when we must risk everything. Everything you hold on to or believe through common sense and take the leap of faith, because that's what faith is after all, into the dark. Once you obey, you will immediately find that what he says is as solidly consistent as common sense, but not till you take that step. Trust completely in God, and when he brings you to a new opportunity of adventure, offering it to you, see that you take it. Only one in an entire crowd is daring enough, has the courage enough to invest his faith totally in the character of God." I had one of those moments, one of those thin place moments several years ago. I was talking to a leadership conference down in Ecuador, actually, and on this hill above Ecuador, as I was quieting down and trying to seek God in the midst of a time when I didn't feel like I was sure I wanted to even continue in this faith journey. Ironically enough, I was speaking to this group on what it takes to finish well. And only God does something like that, puts you in front of those kind of moments. But on that hilltop, the kind of thin place moment for me was, there was a strong sense it was time to take a step, time to launch this dream of an organization that could impact leaders around the country. I'd been sitting on it for a number of years, and it was just kind of this moment when God said, okay, it's time. And time to audaciously believe that if you radically invest in just 20 strategic people at a time, you can change the world. And that was the hope, and that was the belief as we gathered up and started to create this three-event, three-year journey and launched the organization of Harbor Ministry. And under that, we created two leadership journeys, Rhythm and 20, for millennials in their 20s and 30s, a three-event, three-year journey in Rogue, for people 40 and up, but with the belief, crazy, that just 20, if you radically invest in 20 people, you can change the world. And now, several years later, 21 groups, at this point, men that have come from 40-plus different states, several countries, into this journey, we believe it more than ever. If people quiet down, really listen, and take radical steps, things can happen, things can change. This must have been a moment for sure, as Oswald writes about this moment of, there must be times when we go against common sense, because it makes no sense to start an organization and a model of a ministry that just works with 20 at a time. I mean, that makes no sense. And that must have been a moment in Moses' life. My favorite character of the Bible to study and watch his leadership journey, must have felt at this time in his life, after he'd been shepherding sheep in the desert for 40 years. I mean, 40 years, and at the end of this random, mundane day that was much like every other day in his journey of shepherding sheep, this day was different. This day God broke through radically. In that description of when heaven and earth collide, and just for a moment, we see and experience God. This was a moment that changed everything for Moses, for his family, for those people around him. It was became the calling of his life. Now, this was, like I said, in the 40 years of working the father-in-law's business of shepherding sheep. It was a day that looked the same as every other day. The weather was the same, the desert, the sand, and the job was the same. And we've all kind of been there when we're working it again the next day and the next day, and it's like, okay, let's get up and do it. He takes the sheep up the mountain. He protects them, gets them fed, brings them down the mountain. That was life for 40 years. And now at 80 years old, Moses must think this is the way it's going to be. He's settling in and probably okay with that. Not a lot of pressure or ownership. Father-in-law's got that. He just takes care of stuff. And every day must have been the same. Now, this is Moses, who as a baby was given up by his mother because she wanted to protect him. Pharaoh at the time was beginning to slaughter Hebrew children because they were getting too many, and he feared for them, so he began to slaughter babies. And his mother wanted to protect Moses, so she gave him away in quite a moment and cast him down the river, and he miraculously got adopted into Pharaoh's family, and which they took care of. And for the first 40 years of Moses' life, he lived this life of privilege, taken care of, great authority. But around 40 years old, he came to realize what his true identity was, that he was the son of a Hebrew slave. And that started to change his world. And in a moment, when he saw an Egyptian taskmaster abusing a Hebrew, he snapped and killed that Egyptian. And as a result, he was kicked out of the family and banned to the desert. And that's where he spent the next 40 years of his life, in isolation. And probably, as I said, really began to settle in. But this day he took a different turn down the mountain, whatever reason. And he encountered God in a way that would change everything. And so I wanted to read this passage to you, and then we're going to talk about it a little bit. This is probably the most radical thin place encounter that we see and know of, I think, in the Bible in terms of what has happened. And so it's going to be fun to dig into this with you. So if you've got your phone or a Bible or something, turn to Exodus 3. Exodus 3, 1 through 10. Said, now, in the start of this passage, now Moses was pastoring the flock of Jethro, his father-in-law. And again, remember, now this is 40 years into this. I mean, so he's been doing this a long time. And he led the flock to the west side of the wilderness and came to Horeb, the mountain of God. The angel of the Lord appeared to him in a blazing fire from the midst of the bush. And he looked, and behold, the bush was burning with fire, yet the bush was not consumed. So Moses said, I must turn aside and see this marvelous sight, why the bush is not burned up. And when the Lord saw that he turned aside, God called to him in the midst of the bush, Moses, Moses. And he said, here I am, Lord. Do not come near here. Remove your sandals from your feet, for this place you are standing is holy ground. I'm the God of your father, the God of Abraham, the God of Isaac and Jacob. Then Moses hid his face, and he was afraid. And the Lord said, I have surely seen the affliction of my people in Egypt, and have given heed to their cry before their taskmasters. I am aware of their sufferings. So I have come down to deliver them from the power of the Egyptians, and to bring them from the land to a good and spacious land, a land flowing with milk and honey. And so later he says, therefore come now, and I will send you to Pharaoh, so you may bring my people out of the land of Egypt. Now initially, there's a couple things that just really stand out here. In this passage, I mean, pretty clear. And one is just the boldness, the directness, the clarity of which God speaks. He comes into this moment and speaks clearly. And then the other thing for sure is the context of Moses. He listens, right? I mean, he listens. He pays attention. He's ready to hear that in that moment. Now, we could say, okay, you know, burning bush, you wouldn't listen to it, right? But I mean, there is a readiness of Moses in this place that doesn't miss this moment. And I know we all have. I've missed so many moments over the years. We talk about with our kids, and there's so much of the press of life and busyness, right, and the culture, and you want to grab moments when they can, but there's so much we do miss. I mean, there's a couple quick examples. When we're on vacation, my wife and I honeymooned in Hawaii, and we had this dream of going back. 25 years later, we finally saved our pennies and did go back for our 25th anniversary, and we decided to take our kids, don't ask me why, with us. But they were 16, 19, and 21. We actually had a great time with them, but they were there, and they know on trips and vacations, which we've done a lot in our family, I'm notorious for when I see something that's not on the game plan or not on the map, I'm going. Because like, oh, look at this, we got to stop here. And so they know I've got this habit of doing that because I don't want to miss things along the way. And we're driving to the other side of Oahu, and I see some people gathering on the beach, and I wheel a car over, and my daughter gets out with me, let's go check it out, and I'm trying to get the others out, my two sons and wife, nah, they're another stop for dad, it's, we're staying in the car. So we get to the beach, and the scene is these giant sea turtles are heading down the beach and heading into the surf. And that's, I mean, it was just kind of a surreal, amazing scene. And so I'm frustrated that these three aren't getting out of the car, so I'm trying to get their attention, and in the meantime, they disappear, and I miss the moment, because I'm frustrated with them, and, you know, we've had this conversation, fun conversation around that sense that their daughter was the only one that grabbed it. But it was just a surreal, great scene. If we just didn't slow down, you know, and then in my case, if I didn't worry about others, but just absorb that moment, it's such a great thing. Or there was this other time, this is actually the last time I was in the Indianapolis area, it was for my son's basketball tournaments. He was actually a really skilled basketball player as he got into early high school, was being recruited by multiple Division I schools. And so it was the ride of our lives. It was fun and a lot of attention and different things. And Ball State actually was one that, of many that were contacting him. And so it was this great ride. And it was a tournament in the summer and that he had here. And then there was one more going into his senior year in St. Louis. And at that time, we drove to St. Louis. I had a family wedding back home, my niece was getting married on my side, and so my wife flew back for the wedding, and it was just one more tournament of many over the years, right? And so I'm struggling because I want to go to the tournament, but decided to drive back. So I'm about 40 miles outside of St. Louis, and something just caught my attention, nudged me, say, you need to stay. Take the heat from your family, but I think you need to stay for this tournament. And so I did, and turned back around, went back, and Dylan had just this amazing tournament. It was great fun, and had, you know, real strong performances. But what I didn't realize was 2 weeks later, during a workout, he heard felt something snap, and launched into next 18 months of three sports hernia surgeries. The dream of college basketball was over, and that was the last tournament he played. And thank God, you know, I kind of listened and turned that car around and missed it because it was such a fun time, but just had no context or no way of knowing that. But in that moment, to not miss that was such a dramatic thing. And as his story played out, it was such an important few days with him of just celebrating, you know, that moment and not missing it. And I don't want us to miss this morning this story. This is a story, if you've grown up around church some, you're familiar with, right? Maybe. But I want us to dial back in and read this again, because there's a lot here. There's a lot here when we read over and just kind of hear about the burning bush that we might miss. And I want to take you back through it and read this again, if you bear with me on that. And then we're going to talk about it a little bit more so we don't miss the incredible, dramatic, amazing, thin place moments within the context of this story. So let's look at it again. It's, again, Exodus 3. And we'll kind of read bits and pieces of this, but slow this story down for you as you read it too and see what's in here for you. So much time, so often we rush through Scripture and read through these dramatic, incredible stories and maybe miss what God has for us in the moment, right? So here it is. Now Moses was pastoring the flock of Jethro, his father, the priest of Midian, and he led the flock to the west side of the wilderness and came down Horeb, the mountain of God. The angel of the Lord appeared to him in a blazing fire from the midst of the bush. And he looked, and behold, the bush was burning with fire, yet it was not consumed. So Moses said, I must turn aside now and look at this marvelous sight, why the bush is not burned up. Now, this next verse is something. When the Lord saw that he turned aside to look, God called him from the midst of the bush and said, Moses. And then again, Moses. He does not want Moses to miss this moment. So you get the feeling he's saying it again to get his attention. Don't walk by. Don't miss this. Moses, he said, here I am, Lord. Do not come near here. Remove your sandals from your feet, for this place you are standing is holy ground. This moment you need to pay attention. This is a holy ground moment. I am the God of your father, the God of Abraham, Isaac, and God of Jacob. And Moses hid his face now fully in the moment, right? He was afraid to look at God. And the Lord said, I have surely seen the affliction of my people. I have given heed to their cry because of their taskmasters. I am aware of their sufferings. This compassionate God now comes fully through as Moses slows down and hears. the heart that's breaking on behalf of people in bondage and slavery. So I have come down to deliver them from the power of the Egyptians and bring them out to a land full of milk and honey. Therefore, come now, and I will send you to Pharaoh so that you may bring my people, the sons of Israel, out of Egypt. But Moses then says to God, who am I? Who am I to do this? Who wouldn't think that, right? Who am I to possibly do this, that I could bring the sons of Israel out of Egypt? And God said, certainly I will be with you. I'll be with you every step of the way, and this shall be the sign to you that I have sent you. God's saying, you're going to do this. You're okay because you met with me. You met with me in this moment. That's how you're going to make it. Now, a couple observations from this story, right? Now, as we kind of read through it and thought through it a second time as you think through it. Moses was out there 40 years, and we see God's heart for the people, that they're suffering, and he wants to engage and come alongside them and sees that. Why didn't God show up sooner to Moses to give him this call? I mean, he'd been there 40 years. Could have done that at any time, for sure. I mean, I don't know the answer to that question, but I think if we see this for sure, but if we see that in the context of this passage, part of the reason has to be that he was waiting on Moses to be ready. I mean, he was waiting on Moses to listen, to slow down enough off the task, off the job, make the turn in the path, and pay attention and listen. I mean, you see that because of verse 4. To me, one of the most dramatic verses in the Bible. I mean, you have to process this verse. I mean, again, go back to verse 4 and said, when the Lord saw that Moses turned to look, God spoke to him from the midst of the bush. You've got to sit with that a minute. I mean, that's amazing. You know, I mean, that God waited on Moses to turn. It raises some questions, doesn't it? For me, it does. I mean, could that bush possibly have been burning all along? And it was this time that Moses was fully ready, or he chose the path he did, decided to turn the car around like I did outside of St. Louis and kind of go a different way. By the nudging of God, I don't know, but there is a sense here, and we got to deal with this verse. I mean, it gets right to the heart of us as God, for some reason, was waiting on Moses to turn, and when he turned and fully paid attention, that's when he spoke. I mean, pretty amazing, right? I mean, so then the next part of this verse is this was holy ground. This was a holy, incredible, amazing moment. And Moses recognized that. God declares it, that you got to pay attention. Have you ever had that kind of moment? I mean, maybe not the burning bush moment, but have you had a moment where you just got to say, wow, there's something different here. This is a different level of conversation. This is a cool moment. Sometimes in the simplest of things. For me, it was a couple weeks ago. There was this dramatic exploding sunset on our front porch, and I kind of called out my wife. We kind of went out there. Just we got a high view, a lot of sunsets we see, but this was different, and it just exploded across the sky in colors, and it was kind of that one where there was no words for. And so we just both kind of sat and soaked it in, you know, and as you know, it's gone in a minute, but it just quieted us down and just kind of captured that moment. It was pretty incredible. Or there was this holy place moment at a Tom Petty concert I had. Good to Brian. I mean, hey, it happens, right? God can break through in any context. Hearing Brian John sing that song, I'm a big Tom Petty fan and have gone to him many times over the years. But a couple years ago was a more dramatic time. His 40th anniversary tour. I went to him in Iowa, and then we were at a conference out in California, found out he was there and went. But it came at a time in my life that was one of the toughest years, probably the toughest year for me personally, just a couple years ago. The ministry of Harbor and our work with leaders around the country is exploding, and so it was a really, really great time, some of the best of times ministry-wise. But personally, one of the hardest years, and I think it's so true. That there's so often God breaks through, and when we're more attuned and more ready to hear in some of the hardest, darkest times, right? That's certainly been the case with me over the years. It certainly was the case this particular summer. It was about this time of the year, that almost this day, our daughter had been married a year, came back with her husband. They announced they were pregnant, and And it was kind of a surprise. There was this big celebrative moment. It was awesome, you know, and our first grandchild. So it was a blast, and we kind of had that time. 2 weeks later, she comes back by herself and tells us of some of the stuff she'd been carrying for the whole year of their marriage, some of the unfaithfulness of her husband and different things. And she was in the mix of trying to fix it, and she's a counselor, and she thought she could get this done, and she was crumbling. And the pregnancy came at that time. And our world and her world just crashed, and all of a sudden her dreams of what a family and everything else and where she's living started to change, and I'm ticked. I mean, I'm a combination of things, but one thing I am is really, really angry. I married him, stood in front of me, you know, as they made their vows, and I just disheartened. Like, where is God in this moment? And we wrestled through the journey of all that, and we had one of these leadership events with guys out in California, and so I kind of crawled out there, got myself out there, and met with the guys, and it was a really good time, and just a moment when I could start to feel kind of wind come back in the sails a little bit, and God saying, I got her. You keep taking the steps, you keep swinging, and I got this. You know, and it was just a really strong sense of that. And then we found out Petty was playing, and Brian and I went, and to the concert, and the sun was setting over the Pacific. We're on the beach. He's coming out, going crazy, you know. And for somehow, just for that time, I was able to put down the pain and kind of enter in. And he went into one of his songs and was kind of leading, learning to fly. And it's time to kind of fly over your troubles, over the pain. And the people are kind of singing and chanting. And for me, it was experiencing it in a very different way. And after he finished that song, he said, you know, we've been asked how long Tom Petty and the Heartbreakers will play together. 40 years long enough. It's like, now we're going to keep playing. We're going to keep swinging. We're going to do it till one of us drops. And there was this moment for me that God was saying in the midst of that. One, God can use anything, right? Burning bush, Tom Petty concert, music, song, a moment, conversation with a friend. He can break through in anything. And at that moment, saying, keep taking the steps. I got her. And I got you. You're not going to get spared of all the heartache and the pain, just like most people don't, but I'm with you. I'm going to walk through the darkness with you. This is a moment to remember. Keep swinging. More impacting for Petty, because 3 weeks later, he died of a heart attack. And, you know, we saw second to last concert he ever gave, and in that moment, him saying, we're going to keep swinging until, you know, pretty amazing. So that all just became this powerful, impacting, thin place moment, holy ground moment. I would encourage you this morning to not miss those, to remember those kind of times, sometimes the most simplest of times, sometimes more dramatic, when God's shown up, when he's made himself real to you. We're going to take some time pretty soon here to actually do that, to not forget, because there's power and strength in remembering. It steadies us for what's next. Gives us the courage to take the next steps we need to take, to kind of take those steps into the darkness. Sometimes when we're not knowing always what's coming, we just know the calling. The next thing out of this story that I think is so powerful is that God gives this mission to Moses, this incredible mission, right? But he doesn't tell him how he's going to do it and doesn't tell the details. If he did, probably Moses is like, I'm out. Right? He didn't tell him that, by the way, you're going to have to stay with these people for another 40 years, listen to their complaining, and lead them, struggle them, keep them content, keep them moving. But this is going to be a 40-year process. Didn't tell him that. What he did tell Moses was, you're going to go into the courtyard of the most powerful man on the planet, and you're going to tell him his economic engine is over, that the thing that's making Egypt great and strong is done. We're going to take these almost million people, and we're taking them out of Egypt into freedom. That's an impossible that's an impossible task. That was the task he gave to Moses. And now you can see why Moses is saying, who am I to do that? There is no way. There's no way I can do this. Impossible for a man to do this. And God says, what? Again, out of that passage? You can do this because I'm with you. You've met with me. That's difference making. You got this too. Take the step. Won't tell you everything that's coming, but I've given you the mission. You're going to go into that leader, and you're going to free these people and take them out of the pain, suffering, and bondage they've had. You're the man to do it. And so it is, in some ways, this random, incredible moment. Yes, but who better than Moses in the world to do this, right? who better positioned in the world to get this calling from God? It wasn't just random and accidental. This is Moses, who grew up in the family of Pharaoh, so we know he had a relationship. May have been 40 years earlier, but that gained him favor to get him in the door. And so who better in the world to get this calling? So I do think sometimes calling aligns with who we are. I think of you this morning as we were praying and thinking about this morning, and I think of me and say, who positioned better than you in your family, in your business, in your classrooms, to have the influence and the impact, to take the hope of this message of God to others? I mean, who better? That family member that probably needs to hear a little more about God, and it's so hard because of that family connection or that friendship that needs to hear a little bit more, maybe be challenged, you know? Who better than you in that calling? I mean, that's such a great takeaway of this story. This calling that he gave Moses was consistent with his gift mix, with who he was, where he came from, his experiences, all that, very consistent. The last thing on this is, man, there is just this unexplainable relationship between God's power and men and women's sweat. That God has for centuries, and throughout Scripture, we see God chooses to work through people. It's crazy to think about. He waited all this time for Moses to make that turn, and then he spoke. And throughout history, God's worked through men and women willing to take a step out, to engage that relationship, that context, that calling, that thing that's been stirring on their heart. He's worked through us, and he's waited till we're ready to do it. And I just wonder what he's been stirring in your lives and hearts and thoughts in the last weeks, last months, kind of heading up to this moment. So how do we do this? I'm going to do a little application here. How do we slow ourselves down from such a fast pace in the culture, unplug, shut off the noise, so we can get ourselves in a position of listening? How do we do that? I think one thing I would mention is we got to remember. And as these guys come up, we're going to engage you and lead you in a moment of remembering. Remembering kind of the key thin place moments that God's showing up in your own life. Think back over the last days, the last week, the last year, throughout the context of your life. Go back, and we're going to give you a couple, 3 minutes, because we just don't get this opportunity to do this much. And so this is only the start, because I'm going to ask you to practice this through this week coming, a time where you can slow down a little bit and quiet down and get yourself in a position of listening. But this morning we want to take just a couple, 3 minutes. We're just going to be quiet and listen and think about what was a time, I've shared you a couple of mine, a time when God really uniquely showed up in your story. And get that in your head. Remember it. There's power in remembering, like I said. There's strength in remembering, because that helps say, yes, God does show up. Yes, he does walk with me. And whatever I'm facing, whatever I will face, whatever circumstances are coming, whatever the new challenges, the new opportunities, the exciting things that are coming, God can walk through it with me. But we got to remember those moments. So take a couple, 3 minutes, see if God stirs a memory of a time when he really uniquely showed up in your story. Got that? Capture it? And I wish we had time to hear some of it. That would be a blast to just open this up, because I think there'd be such encouragement from hearing those moments, those sometimes so simple, yet sometimes profound moments when God just reaches into your story and reminds you he's there. Take time to remember. Don't just do this couple minutes we just gave you. I just encourage you to grab a journal and find a half hour today even to remind yourself of that and write them down. And then go back to them again and again and say, man, there's going to be times when you need it. And you need to remember, I've got several. I've got a journal full of those. Or there's this, because they don't happen that often, right? Those kind of moments, but to remember and to read back on them. I was doing this in preparation for this week we're going on, where we're going out and seeing leaders that have been through this journey of ours in seven different cities, and just reminding myself of the stories and the impact and the way God showed up in this journey is just so cool. So I just encourage you to do that, because people that encounter thin places, difference-making people, remember. They don't forget. They remember the joy of their salvation and how God uniquely met them. A couple more things. I think this idea of being attentive, of listening, that verse 4 where Moses really dials in, turns, and when God sees him, that's practice. Being attentive to people is tough, right? Anybody that's married knows that. I mean, if my wife was here, she'd give you a little different view on my ability to attend to her words and conversations that distracted. There's lots of conversations going through media and different stuff and tired from the day, whatever. I mean, that being attentive and really focused on each other, that's hard work. That takes practice. That doesn't just happen easy. Why is it any different in our relationship with God? To practice an attentiveness and a quietness. Our oldest, who's now 29, is really strong-willed, has been since about 2 days of birth on, and still is, but there's great strength in that, a fierceness to his personality and all that. But when he was young, he taught us many lessons, and starting at about age 3, if he sensed I wasn't listening or paying attention, he would literally grab my face and turn it and get me to look at him. No, Dad, he was that bold and would deal that in different ways. He does that still today if you're not paying attention. And that's kind of what we're talking about. That takes work. That takes practice. That art of listening is difficult. Ruth Haley Barton's an author, says, paying attention awakens us to the extraordinary in the ordinary. If we dial in and pay attention, it wakes us up to the extraordinary moments in the ordinary days. That's really powerful, right? This week, one other thing I'd encourage you to do is change it up a little bit. Change up your routine. Maybe go down a different path like Moses did that day. This time he went down the west side of the mountain. Maybe shake it up a little bit. Drive a different way home. Take a little more time. Linger a little bit before you get there. And see if God just kind of shows up in the moments of that. And the last thing I want to mention today is, what's stirring in your own heart? Is there a burning bush that's kind of stirring? Maybe a word, sense you've had of maybe a conversation you need to have, maybe a habit or something you need to step back from, something that you kind of know is there and you need to attend to it a little bit more. Maybe God's already been speaking to you on that. Is there a calling that would take some guts to step out and say, let's do this? Life's too short not to do it. None of us guaranteed outcome or success or not, but if you sense God kind of been working on you and stirring that flame in your heart a little bit, this might be the time to take it. Take some time to kind of go there this week. I think there's probably something there for each of us in a different way as we think about it. Let me pray, and then we're going to close up. Absolutely loved being here with you today. It's a blast, and you can just sense the great presence of you in this room and what the team here in Matt's built, and so really fun to be a part of it. If you're interested in this idea of thin places that Brian and I have been talking about, I've got a book out there. We want to give it to you out in the lobby. I don't know how many's left, but if you want one, grab it. And some information on our organization out there too. Brian's song, Thin Places, you can get to that. Access in the back of this book, so you can download that. And so it's good. And there's other ways to get it if we run out, but I just wanted to mention that to you. So let me pray. Lord, thanks for this moment. Thanks for this time with these people. What a privilege to be here. Just thank you for this story. The Bible filled with truth and filled with incredible stories. And we just read through one of them, how you broke through in the mundane and gave an 80-year-old man the mission of his life. And we know you have that for each of us here, no matter what our age, no matter what our calling and walk of life, that there's a mission you've given us. And so I just pray you'll help us to be attentive to that, listening. Give us the eyes and ears to really dial in, to focus on you, to not miss those thin place moments when they come. Amen.